Welcome to Coochie Conversations, where we give you the real on all things women's health, spirituality, and motherhood. Empowering women to have sovereignty over themselves, we shine light on the disparities that women face daily as divine feminine beings. So steep your favorite tea, roll up your favorite smoke blend, and tune into this week's episode of Coochie Conversations. Peace Tribe, it's your girl Bianca Pittman, aka Divine Mother, your Coochie Shiro, and we are back this week giving you a fresh Coochie Conversations episode. Today we have a special guest in the building. Her name is Janice, a lactation counselor from Chocolate Milk Cafe. And she'll be sharing with us everything we need to know when it comes to breastfeeding. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Please introduce yourself to the collective.
Hello, people. My name is Janice Clark, as Bianca stated. I am the owner of JC Lactation Counseling as a Bronx-based lactation consultant company. I offer in-person and virtual visits to folks across the U.S., and I am a proud facilitator of the Harlem Bronx chapter of Chocolate Milk Cafe.
Wow. Thank you for being here today. I had the pleasure of meeting Janice at the Black Women in Business Conference earlier this summer in Harlem. We were selling our products and she came to our table and, you know, we had a little interaction and she shared with me what she does, which I thought was amazing, especially, you know, as Black moms, we need all the information that we can get in regards to how to naturally feed our babies. Today, we also have Naj here, who's also with child. So we have some pregnant mommies, aside from myself, on the podcast. And we're just here to, you know, eat up all the information that you have to share with us. Definitely want to touch on the disparities of breastfeeding. You know, a lot of women have questions on, you know, they're not producing enough milk. When's the best time to feed? How to get my baby to latch? You know, all these hoopla of questions. So I'll let you get into, you know, like, I want to know how you started. What was your passion behind becoming a lactation counselor? Maybe share your experience with us. And yeah.
So my experience with breastfeeding, I delivered my son 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago almost. And I just knew that I wanted to breastfeed, but I had zero prenatal education. No one was really talking to me about lactation and breastfeeding, but I just thought this is what people do. They just breastfeed, right? So when my son was born, first latch, second latch, third latch, I'm like, okay, this hurts. A lot. Like, I'm literally wincing in pain. I asked for a lactation consultant at the hospital. She came and spent maybe like 20 minutes with us. Didn't help at all. She claimed the latch looked fine, but I'm literally wincing in pain. All right, fast forward. I'm in pain for 6 weeks. And at this point, we had already introduced formula to give my breasts a break, right? And I was just filled with so much guilt because, oh my God, formula is so bad, right? That was the thoughts that I had. Like, I didn't know any better, right? I had a breast pump, didn't know how to use it properly. I was just a mess, right? Because finally at 6 weeks I went to my local WIC office, and they have breastfeeding peer counselors there, and she taught me the football hold, or now they call it the clutch. And that made all the difference. So we're starting to breastfeed painless and things are going okay. But then I was having like engorgement. I was having clogged ducts. This issue, I kept having issues. And I reached out to private practice lactation consultants in the Bronx. And two were listed on the hospital discharge papers. And I contacted them and they were like, it was going to be $400 for a home visit and this and that. And they didn't take my insurance. And I'm like, I don't have a job. I can't afford this. So I was like, oh, I don't know. Anyway, And I just couldn't figure out like why my son's doctor was just so anti-breastfeeding and he wasn't supportive. And the nurse who was coming to my house, like every week or every 2 weeks, she didn't know much about breastfeeding. And I just felt like almost defeated in a way, and folks around me, like my mom, my neighbor was like, oh, you have to give your baby formula. You have pain, you gotta wean, this and that. I just kept pushing. I just kept pushing. I just kept pushing. So then, because I'm a know-it-all, like I will be the first one to admit I'm a know-it-all. And this is my personality. Like I just need to be right about everything. And I'm so serious.
What's your birthday?
August 7th, I'm a Leo.
Okay. We having a Leo in a couple days.
Oh yeah, we're in Leo. Okay, we're almost in the Leo. Yep.
Officially in Leo season.
Yes. So I don't know how. I'm not really sure. Between my mom, my husband, and I, we said, Janice, you would make a good lactation counselor or consultant. Because I was just like digging up information. I was on KellyMom.com. I was researching. I was doing all of this. And when my son was about 5 months old, I found a lactation counselor training program that was going to be offered in person in the city in Manhattan. And I was like, okay, I could afford this because, oh, I settled with my previous employer because I alleged discrimination. So I got a settlement check and I was like, okay, I got this money. Let me go and, take care of myself. Basically, I wanted to take this training so that I can help myself and help my own issues. So I didn't go into this with like the foresight of I'm going to start a business. I just wanted to get information because I wanted to tell people, hey, here's my, certification. I know what I'm talking about. Stop telling me to wean, okay?
Same thing with me. Like, I didn't start BU Beauty or the products based off of trying to start a business out of it. I really healed myself, and then it inspired me to want to help, other women who have similar issues. So I definitely understand, like, using yourself as the guinea pig, or, just trying to do something for yourself and then finding so much passion in it and wanting to then outpour that passion to other people.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. So like after when the pandemic, George Floyd was murdered, and that sparked something inside of me. I said, okay, I want to protest. This is crazy. We're all feeling the feels, right? The anxiety, the anger, the frustration. And I was like, okay, I want to protest. I want to do something, but I was afraid to go downtown to protest because I was like, okay, if I get arrested, they don't have a breast pump, I'm gonna get engorged, right? I was like, okay.
Thinking about is that pain of that engorgement without that breast pump.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I know it's a hand express, but I was like, nah, And then I was like, okay, I don't have enough money to send to bail bond, so let me start a business because I, at this point, I started researching and realizing that Black women breastfed. There's a disparity. We breastfeed at the lowest rates
Yes,
in the United States.
we're more, I guess, likely to just do formula.
But that's the thing. Many of us start off breastfeeding. In the general population, 80% of American women start off breastfeeding. But the cards are stacked against us due to various reasons. I would say the biggest and most important historical factor stems from that enslaved African women were forced to be wet nurses for plantation owners' children. So this skill was taken away from us. It was forcibly removed from us, right? And as formula gained popularity in the late 1800s, the shift started to be made that, oh, formula is scientifically proven to be as good or better than breast milk.
Right.
Formula is the best way to feed your children. The field of pediatrics came about, and so was this like medicalization of motherhood, where men basically took
Came in,
charge of labor.
took out the midwife and
Yeah.
the gynecologist, which was
Yes.
more so men.
And the pediatrician, it used to be the midwife, the mom who had this like instinctual way of nurturing the
Her baby,
child,
right?
right? But then the pediatrician came about, and why they call it formulas, because literally they had to adjust in the lab
A formula.
the formulation for the needs of the growing baby.
Right.
So as formula became more popularity, it was seen as a status quo. Oh, if you can afford formula, that means your family is doing really well. And then breastfeeding started to remind Black folk of slavery. So the goal was to use formula and not breastfeed anymore. And this was like the whole of America. They were all merging to formula feeding. So in addition to the medicalization of motherhood and the forced wet nursing, there's also been a terrible stigma, I guess, against and stereotype against the Black female, against the body. We have, big butts, big lips, big breasts, and our natural features were seen as obscene,
Right.
or that we were promiscuous, right? Many women, enslaved women, were raped and forced to breed master's children, right? So all of this combined with formula being used, it was even a more of a push away from breastfeeding, because oh, you're breastfeeding, your breasts are out, oh, you're a whore, you're a prostitute, oh,
Right,
you're you
because
want
we how dare us feed our babies?
How dare you have your breasts out,
Think even my mom, they were out to eat the other day. My cousin just had a baby, and she was at the table and she was breastfeeding. She covered up or whatever, but my mom said that somebody at the table had something to say about it. And I'm like, well, why? I'm like, first of all, she's covered up. She's doing better than me because I probably wouldn't even care. And number two, I'm not going into the bathroom. Nobody eats in the bathroom.
Oh God.
I'm not going into the bathroom to feed my baby.
Oh no.
If you think that this is indecent exposure or what, or you feel like it's sexual or not appropriate because I have my breast out to feed my baby, then that's something that you need to think about. Why is that your train of thought?
Exactly.
So instead of like shunning us or shaming us for how we decide to how we're feeding our babies.
Yeah, it's sad. Yeah, I had my boobs out anywhere, anytime, any place. It didn't matter. I was like, if there's a nurse in, like a protest, I will go with my child and just whip it, quote unquote, whip it out,
Right.
right? I'm sorry that happened to your cousin. That's
Yeah, I was like,
not
and
right.
it made me feel some time, like she's a new mom. Her baby's
Yeah.
like, and
Come on. That's unnecessary.
yeah, like just
Right.
like you sitting here eating your food, my baby's sitting here eating his food. Like,
Yeah, come on. All
let's.
right.
So it's really a thing. I mean, I get
Yeah.
backlash even just for not wearing a bra. So.
Oh, I started going braless after I gave, like, after my son was weaning off. I haven't been wearing bras in like a year or two.
Yeah, me
It's
neither.
so liberating.
It's always, where's your bra? And I'm just like, why?
Ooh.
These are my titties. Like,
Mind your own tits.
they're your own tits, please.
My gosh. So going back to, the whole of America is formula feeding now. At some point, I don't know which at which point, the tide started to change again. That hey, actually, breast milk is best,
Right.
right? Maybe in the 50s, public health organizations, public health officers started really promoting breastfeeding, like heavy. Breast is best, this and that, this and that. The rates did start going up. Eventually, I think the rates were the lowest in America in the 1970s. It was like maybe a quarter of American women were breastfeeding at that time. So anyway, so they started going up a little bit because of the promotion from the public health sector. And then La Leche League came about, right? So this is a peer-to-peer breastfeeding support group, but they were started by white women in the suburbs. They weren't going out into the cities to talk to black women. So then white breastfeeding rates started going up because they were getting the support, right? So they're going up. Meanwhile, black women in America are still seeing breastfeeding as something bad, as something, reminding people of slavery. And so
It was like still like a trigger for them.
still triggered. Yeah, it was still, so you have the grandmas who, the great grandmas who are still alive. They're like, oh, that's nasty, or that's reminding people of slavery, of slavery, you shouldn't do that anymore. Just get formula is easier. So these things started penetrating, right, generations of families where formula feeding was just so normalized that barely any, in some families, like nobody was breastfeeding in some black families. They weren't doing a lot to promote black breastfeeding. And the images that were being portrayed of black women breastfeeding were women in, Central and South Africa, with both breasts out, feeding their children, naturally. And that wasn't representative of American women. And it was seen as, oh, like, oh God, look at the animals again, basically. They
Wow.
devalue black people, right? Because we were like literal cattle, right? So it was like, oh, so that was even more of a push. Black people even more of a push, like, oh no, I don't want to be associated with
So
this.
it's a formula.
Yes, it's the formula. Yeah. So yeah, that's where we started, and in the America, but that's not where we actually started, because back home in the motherland, we were breastfeeding, right? It would have been evolutionary suicide if breastfeeding was an issue. If breastfeeding was painful, the species would have died out. So it's necessary, right, in order to keep our species alive. The rates started going up, but black women's breastfeeding rates were still, they were going up too, but not as high as the white women.
Right.
So that's where you get the disparities, right? And then you start seeing disparities in the childhood mortality rates. Black babies are dying at disproportionate rates compared to white babies. American women in general were dying in childbirth
Yes.
at disproportional rates than other developed
Other labor and
nations.
all that stuff. They all do midwifery. They all do home births and things. Dublin, and we're just here. I get a lot of backlash all the time. It's like, oh my God, you're gonna do a home birth for your first baby? Like
Safer.
you're crazy. And I'm like, no, this is how your ancestors were brought into this realm.
Thank you.
I mean, and I said, and I always say, like, having a baby is not a medical condition. Unless you have a high risk pregnancy, okay, but just having a baby is not a medical condition. You see these animals outside, ask for epidural. They're not asking you to intervene and check their cervix. They're not asking for Pitocin or nothing. They're just tapping into their animalistic nature and having their babies. And that's what we're here to do. So,
yeah. And thank goodness for, you know, modern gynecology and modern medicine, because there are more babies being, you know, saved, right? And vaccinations. Well, let's not get into vaccination. That's a whole nother hot topic. That's a whole hot topic. But you know what? This is a I don't know if you know, but midwives in, I want to say, East Africa, like Uganda, taught Europeans how to do a cesarean section. Okay, because in Europe, in the, you know, 1800s, 1700s, those women were dying.
Yeah,
they didn't understand anything about the germ theory. Wasn't a thing yet.
They didn't even want to take showers. So,
girl, like once a year.
So how are you going to think about germs when it comes to childbirth and stuff like
that? Yep. So they learned the cesarean section from East African midwives.
Wow.
It came from our
motherland. We would never know.
Yeah, but you know, these things aren't, why would they want us to know these things? Like, why would they want this in our conscious?
They take something, they capitalize off of it. You know what I mean? Because now you guys learn how to do cesarean section from us. But now you're just doing them way too much. You're doing them for every reason. And it's like, not, I'm not opposed to it, because like you need it at some point. Maybe, you know, it's necessary. But the way that you do these C-sections now, it's just like, especially Black women, it's like, everybody getting a C-section.
It's a chop shop.
Yes.
But that's the thing. OBGYNs, they are doctors. They are trained surgeons. They are surgeons.
Right.
Like, you know, when we really sit there and think about that, that's their job, to cut open a person and take out the baby.
A C-section is a whole surgery. Like,
yes.
You know?
It's a major abdominal surgery.
Yes.
It is not an easy way of delivering a child. Like, people have this like misconception, like, oh, I have to push, you know, it's you know, that's easy. I'm like, you just had to
opt for a C-section. I didn't even realize. My sister, she told me recently, like, yeah, I got a C-section because I was too chicken to push. And I was like, what? She's like, part of it was like, yeah, I was too chicken to push. And I'm like, you opted to a C-section? Like,
yeah, I know a few people who opt for a C-section. And I'm just like, why? Why would you want to go through that process? That healing process is so much worse. Opting for it is like a whole different thing, because you just want to get it over and done with. But it's just, a lot of that is about the way we look at ourselves as women.
And brainwashing.
Yeah, the entire idea behind, like, you know, especially amongst Black women, just not seeing just how beautiful that experience is, and seeing the good in that experience. It's been kind of like feared out of us. Like, oh, it's so horrible. Like, oh, it's the worst pain of your life. Oh, girl, you could wait. Oh, this and that. So it's like all of that back track, it trickles down. And that's part of why I think it's, when you get to the part of like even feeding your child, I know women who don't breastfeed simply because of laziness. And I hate the word laziness, right? Mm. But it's the truth. Like, they just can't be bothered.
In some groups, these women, that don't want to breastfeed because they got their nipples pierced. Like, they don't want
to. Yeah. And you can breastfeed with your nipples there.
Yeah. Oh, you can.
Yes. Just take the nipple. Let's take the piercings out. You could breastfeed.
Oh, the bit. That's when you bite the nipple of the bottle.
No, I'm talking about
a little bigger.
Yeah,
but baby. So it's true. It's sad to say that. Like, I think we spoke last week briefly on like even the mentality. If you tell your body and yourself, your whole pregnancy, one thing. When it comes down to breastfeeding, you know, your body's going to respond how your mind has been thinking all this time. You know, I don't have time for that. Oh, you know, how am I gonna work this around my schedule? How am I gonna? But it's necessary for. Yeah, it's not only about like feeding and providing nourishment to your child, because yeah, you could go with formula for that, but it's also the fact that there is a connection there.
Bond.
And they, yeah, it's a bond, and they don't, they, you know, that's the bigger picture. Rushing to have a C-section because you want to get it over with. Not breastfeeding because you don't have the time or patience to sit down and create that bonding experience. That is carries through. That's how your relationship develops with your child.
Janice, do you find, Janice, do you find that moms who've had cesareans are have less of a, or moms that have cesareans, they're not able to breastfeed right away, right? Because like their milk has to kind of kick in.
I want to actually put in my two cents on what Naj was talking about. And it goes so much with, it's a morbid thought that I have, right? After slavery was ended, well, we're still in mental slavery. That's another topic.
Right.
After chattel slavery was ended in this country, they had to find a way to still make money off of the black body. And I think C-sections was that way. It's one of the ways to make money off of us.
It's a 50% increase, you know, when you do a C-section. And then it's a fast procedure. So you can do more C-sections than one woman being in labor.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, and then it doesn't, and then it goes hand in hand with feeling like, with them viewing black women as these superwomen who don't feel pain.
You know, so James it's like,
I'm not doing anything wrong. You know, they probably don't even think anything morally is wrong with just hacking. And because they think, you know, oh, black women, they can take it.
Mm-hmm.
It's making us more money, and it's getting them out of our faces quicker. So it's a win-win.
Yeah. Ooh, you're right. Yeah. And, you know, medical students are still learning. There's a study done like back in like 2016, which is like really recent, that lay people and medical students and doctors still thought in the 21st century that black people's skin was thicker than white people's skin, and that black people have a higher pain tolerance than white people.
And that's why we're not seen or heard when we're in these medical establishments, because they just feel like we don't feel any pain.
Exactly.
You know, and this is why the mortality rate is what it is, because if I tell you something's wrong, you're telling me like, no, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I don't understand. People try to tell you about a body that you've been in for 30, 40, 50 years, and you just met me 10 minutes ago.
Right. They think, some of them think, oh, they've been a labor and delivery nurse for, you know, 16 years. They know more than you. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. You know about the, you know, like biology of it, but you don't know my body. You don't know my pain.
Right. My pain threshold.
Right. So going back to your question, mm-hmm. And that's an excellent question. Very excellent, because there is a correlation between breastfeeding, like C-sections, and milk supply or milk production. So this will take like a really quick, you know, step back into like before the baby even comes. Your milk is starting to come in during your second trimester of pregnancy. Your body's going through all these changes. So your milk is already there. So a way to know that your body is going to be able to make milk is if you feel your breasts grow larger, and if you see your areola becoming darker, and if your nipples become more sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all signs that your chance of being able to make milk is going to happen. It's very, 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 very high chance, right? So, and the first milk is colostrum.
Right.
The first milk is rich, is full of antibodies. That's what they call liquid gold. It literally is liquid gold, right? And it's in very small amounts because newborn babies have very small stomachs, so they only need a few like milliliters, you know, at each feeding on the first day. So if a mom had a C-section, that's considered an intervention, and right. There's a correlation between having interventions and having the mature milk come in later. So an average, we say your milk should, when we say milk should come in, the mature milk should start to transition between 3 to 5 days post-delivery. So you'll see 3 days more for a mom that had an uncomplicated vaginal delivery. And you'll see the 5 day mark with a mom who had a C-section or who had, you know, interventions during the labor, such as inductions, Pitocin, epidural, things of that sort. But just because the milk hasn't fully transitioned yet, doesn't mean that you don't breastfeed, because the colostrum is there. Keep putting the baby on the breast, it will come.
Right, and you're still stimulating, and it's mm-hmm. the relationship between the breast and the baby that tells your body that, you know, you need to produce milk.
Exactly. It's the stimulation of the breast. Basically, so there's two hormones related to breastfeeding, and, you know, there's prolactin.
And oxytocin.
And oxytocin. Prolactin is the milk-making hormone. Oxytocin is the feel-good hormone.
Stimulation.
Yep. That causes your milk to let down. Causes the milk to release from your nipples. And what stimulates oxytocin is the tugging of the nipple. So that's whether, so babies, they breastfeed and they're tugging the nipple. If you're hand expressing, you're tugging at your nipple. If you're pumping, you're tugging at the nipple, right? So those three ways is necessary in order to establish your milk supply. And in the beginning, the minimum, like, this is like, okay, 8 times. Had this number in your head. 8 to 12 times in a 24-hour period. Minimum for breastfeeding or pumping is what you need to establish your milk supply. Mm. So if you're 1 day, 2 days postpartum and you're pumping 2 times a day, 3 times a day, you're not going to make milk. Get, like, 100% guaranteed.
That constant.
That's the first I've heard that.
You need that constant, you need effective and frequent sessions of milk removal.
So if a woman has a C-section, so she's waiting for her breast to, her milk to come in naturally, she should just be tugging?
Because her milk is already there.
Right. So
the baby will have colostrum and it will keep the baby and the colostrum will keep the baby fed. And then for some kids, yes, it can be they're hungry, they may need to supplement with pumped milk or with formula, depending on, you know, the parents' wants and wishes. So some babies get a bottle or a you know, a tube feeding or cup feeding. There's so many ways to feed a baby. You can use a syringe, a spoon, a cup. Right. You can mm-hmm. finger feeding with a tube. So for some moms, they will need to supplement, because the first rule of childcare is to feed the baby.
Right.
Feed the baby. The baby's looking like they're still hungry, and you can know the baby is still hungry by watching for hunger cues. Yeah.
Right.
Well, you, Bianca, you're about to have a baby. And Nash, so you tell the audience about what hunger cues are.
So I feel like when, like, you can tell by just their hand movements, like when their hands are closed, when their hands are open. So I think, like, when their hands are closed, it's like they're still hungry.
Yep.
And then once their hands start to relax and open up, you can tell that the baby had enough food.
Yep.
And then obviously, you know, they're always looking around for the nipple.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So my sister just had a baby a month ago. So today is about to be 7 weeks. And in the beginning, My sister had a cesarean, and Tanae was born a month early. But my mom, you know, we're Jamaican, so she's like, you have to breastfeed, you have to breastfeed. Like, so, you know, she begins her breastfeeding, and what she realized was, first of all, the appetite that she had when she was pregnant is not the same when she gave birth. Mm. She wasn't eating enough. So I noticed that she would have cravings, but she wasn't eating full meals. So she would have like little snacks here and there. And then she would drink her mother's milk, which helps tremendously. And so I noticed it's kind of weird because I watch my sister a lot because she just went through this experience I'm about to go through. And so I was watching her and I would notice that she would create maybe two ounces out of each breast when she wasn't eating as much, but even if she drank the mother's milk. Now, when she was eating, drinking the mother's milk and hydrating more with electrolytes, she would produce like 4 ounces from each and sometimes six. So we're still kind of like finding ins and outs of this breastfeeding process because her daughter is a preemie. And to me, personally, I feel like she's growing so fast. And she did like all her growth outside of the womb. So now she is the size of a newborn baby, a normal newborn baby. She's past 8 pounds. And she eats and she eats. Like she... What? When is Tanae hungry? And then when she's done, like she's done. She's good. She's sleeping. But the problem being is that her stomach doesn't settle. So she gripes a lot. We got the infant preservative straight from Jamaica. and she's very gripey. So at first my sister was giving her breast milk mainly. Then we switched to half breast milk, half formula, but that wasn't working out with her stomach. Then she went back to giving her predominantly breast milk, but it was very hard because she wasn't producing as much milk that she required. She went from like 3 ounces. No, she went from 2 ounces to 4 in moments. And so now it is still mixing the formula, but she's like conflicted. She's like, you know, it fills her up. The breast milk is like water to her. The formula does fill her up, but it's acidic. You know what I'm saying? It's causing a lot of chafing. She's going very often and her stomach is not settled. So it's just very, and I told her, I was talking to my mom about it too. I was like, you know, I feel like it's what we've grown up in this society to put in our bodies that plays a role in this. Because I asked the woman if, is there any foods that I should be eating before I give birth to, you know, maybe produce better milk? She was like, no, not really. She answered so quick. But I don't know. I'm just like watching her. I'm just watching my sister. I watch what she eats. I watch what she eats when she has more milk production. I watch what she eats. So I feel like there might be that correlation just from my observation. And I feel like over time, there are things that kind of, especially with Black women, that our body doesn't agree with from way before we get pregnant that could have long-term effects on our abilities to breastfeed. Because my mom is like, you know, I never went through so much trouble. I had 5 kids and I breastfeed and I didn't have all this trouble. And I said, your lifestyle was different. You know, right. Stress plays a role in your hormone balance. Your environment plays a role. Your diet plays a role. A lot of things in this generation plays a role in our hormone balance. So living in a country where the food is more natural, where you have a whole different lifestyle and a whole different stress level could play a role in maybe, just in my mind, what I come up with, maybe why this generation of women is having a little more difficulty breastfeeding, but I wasn't considering the epigenetics of it all, that we may have carried the trauma all the way down.
Absolutely.
From the top.
Absolutely.
Yep.
That too, you know, that could very well, like, yes, it's a trauma experience. And I just noticed that it's this generation of women, I'm not sure how it was before. They can be like, they send their baby down. And I'm like, you don't worry about like breastfeeding or nothing like that. They just send their baby down home to their grandparents or whomever at a very young age. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how are you able to do that and still establishing a bond?
You know,
and that's just a personal criticism of mine.
You bring up a lot of great points, Naj. So I'm going to take it all the way back to when you were talking about your niece. You said, what stuck out to me was that you said your niece was born premature, right?
Yeah.
Right.
She was born 1 month exact early. So she was due July 3rd and she was born June 2nd.
Okay. So that's about like 4 weeks early. Right. So
high blood pressure her entire
pregnancy. Oh, no.
From top to bottom.
Okay. So full term is considered 39 weeks. Early term is considered 37 to 39 weeks. And preterm is considered less than 37 weeks. So there is definitely a correlation between having your baby early and struggles with making milk. Because you have to tell your body, hey, I don't have the baby anymore. So that's like first like roadblock for moms of premature babies. And then, you got to pump frequently. 8 to 12 times in a 24-hour period. Got such a clock to wake up at night. It's arduous, right? And you mentioned your sister being very hungry, which is reminding me that, yes, the body prioritizes making milk. Your body uses about 500 calories. Your body needs about 500 calories extra each day while breastfeeding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, you'll make about like 28-30 ounces of milk each day. Imagine that. That's like what, a quart?
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of milk.
That's a lot of milk.
Yeah. So your body needs that energy, you know? So
am I getting bigger? I'm like, you're not getting bigger. You draw down. Like, you look, you know what I mean? Like,
that happened to me too. I draw down plenty.
Yeah.
After I gave birth. Because I wasn't eating. I was snacking. I was stressed, you know, because I had issues with my mom. And it was just a lot. So, like, you know, you have like the combination of not eating. And I mean, like, eating well. Like, oh, I'm eating just fruits and veggies all day long, you know? Because we're West Indian, we're, you know, from down south, we're going to eat different foods than white America, right? So I always tell, you know, folks, like, eat what makes you happy, eat with, you know, moderation, and eat what keeps you full and energized, because making milk is going to suck you dry, all right? And hydration is definitely key, right? So
right,
you're dehydrated, you're making all this fluid, you need water, you need, you know, electrolytes, as Naj mentioned, you know.
Mm-hmm. Coconut water,
however you want to hydrate yourself, you know, limit the sodas.
I fill this water bottle up like 7 times a day.
Yeah.
My sister drank the water and the electrolyte and an electrolyte drink.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it's called, but it has a lot more electrolytes. So she,
I know Body Armor is very popular.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Started drinking those sparingly.
So I have a, so this is something that I want to add about that, right? some folks think that, you know, lactation cookies, lactation teas, body armors are a quick fix to breastfeeding struggles or, you know, challenges. And they're not. Remember I told you the 8 to 12 times to breastfeed or pump?
Right.
You can, if you can drink all the body armor in the world, and if you're not pumping or breastfeeding that baby, you ain't going to make milk.
Right.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. You're not going to make milk. I'm going to say this again. You have to breastfeed 8 to 12 times in a 24-hour period to make milk. So if you are like chronically dehydrated, you will see a bump up to baseline if you drink, you know, the lactation teas and the body armor. It will bring you up to normal, but it's not going to push your supply up high.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's the pulling action.
The stimulation. Like
stimulation. Yeah. Yes. So, and then, of course, there's also herbs we can use to help with milk.
Oat straw.
Right.
I make lactation tea. Yes.
Yeah. And those, you know, of course, coming from the science, the evidence, you know, it's like.
There's no real
correlation or like, you know, cause and effect. But, you know, I think anecdotally, you know, I think that's important for like Black folk.
Right.
Right. You know, so and then your body prioritizes making milk. So if you're not eating a lot, your body's going to draw from your bones, from your tissue, to make that milk. So you could be like starving and your baby is well fed.
Right. And that could be a contributing factor of like in the beginning, she had like a lot of energy. And like, so she sleeps a lot more than even when she was pregnant, which I found very interesting. Don't worry, guys. Like, I promise you, she's very tired of me, but she understands that I'm always like a little speculator. Just like checking on her all the time. She's like, girl, leave me alone. I'm like, are you okay?
But you love her. I love for your sister.
She sleeps a lot. So I think that's part. And I take everything that I learn, even speaking on here, like I take everything back to her because like I really, you know, I really want to help in the best way that I can, you know. So,
absolutely.
I didn't even know that even correlated. I thought that's just something that happened from her just like waking up all the time to a baby crying. But like, I didn't realize it could be your milk, like draining life out of you. That like the baby will literally drain you.
Yeah, you know. And then like, you know, it's such an amazing experience breastfeeding, right? If you're, you know, nursing your child on demand, which is, you know, you're looking out for the hunger cues, like. As you mentioned, the balled up fists and the sticking the tongue out and the turning the head from side to side, you know, or if they're in a sleepy state, like and their eyeballs are moving behind their eyelids, right? Those are all great signs to feed your baby. Yo, this is, I'm gonna get real excited right here. So I'll be sleeping and then I just feel my breast filling up and it wakes me up and my baby starts crying right away.
Yes.
Instantaneously.
The baby crying can stimulate your breast. She said the baby crying can stimulate your breast to start like getting milk, like getting milk ready. She's like, same thing. I'm like, what the heck?
Yes, it's amazing.
Demanding your milk.
Yes, it's amazing.
Wow.
And it would be like the next room over. And at the same time, baby crying, your milk filling up. It's like, because you're on the same schedule. You're synchronized.
Right.
Here, my son here. Mommy. Boy. Go to your father. Well, mommy. So it's just such a beautiful, you know, thing. And it's like, I'm going to bring up evolution again. We are a species that's meant to carry and hold our babies close. because right, a crying baby out in the woods with no protection, they're gonna get eaten.
Right.
So, you know, there's some animals where, you know, they're walking and they're not being carried, like say deer or goats, right? But humans, orangutans, kangaroo, chimpanzee, you know, we carry our babies. So we're biologically geared towards nursing them frequently. So that's why the frequent feeds come into play, right? Right. And then, you know, Nash, you brought up so many. I was taking notes while you were talking. I was like, oh, you're bringing up some great things. So when you talk about, you know, your mom and how she was like, oh, she breastfed all her kids and, you know, it shouldn't have any problems. That's one of the things with our support system. Sometimes they put too much of their experience into the presence and on us. You know, whether that was a good experience, you know, oh, she breastfed all of her kids, or, you know, a traumatizing or a bad experience. Oh, I wanted to breastfeed and I couldn't, or, you know, I was separated from my baby, or my spouse forced me to breastfeed and I didn't want to. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair for a new mom to hear those things.
Lord, it's not hearing it for 9 months. Everybody's experience, everybody, and it's always something like negative. No, it's,
yeah,
to the point where it's like, if you don't have nothing positive to share, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah,
like,
and that's our problem.
About your tears, I don't want to hear about your epidural and your back still hurting. I don't want to hear about your birth, unless I ask you. Because people, it's one thing if I ask you, but a lot of people just put their fears on you, especially when they find out how you deciding to have birth. And I had to write a post about it like a few months ago. Like, if y'all don't have nothing positive to share, don't share it. Like, I don't think you guys have any compassion for new moms who are on this journey. And we're all on our own journeys. And my experience is not going to be your experience. Like,
We have a problem with censoring.
Yes.
We have a problem with censoring the new mom, because yes, a baby was born, but a mother was also born.
Right. And
that seemed to be like forgotten,
mm-hmm.
You know, that what's going on now is her, what she wants. What are her current experiences? Yes, you can use your experience to help her, but if it's not relevant,
based in fear, it's like, you're not helping me.
You're not helping. Exactly. And, you know, so that's a huge, huge, huge thing. And we also need to normalize. This is a big plug for my profession. We got to normalize lactation consultants, lactation counselors, and breastfeeding specialists.
Mm-hmm.
We got to normalize seeking help. Right. Because, you know, as I said, a lot of us wanted to breastfeed. We know the science, right? We know that human milk is good for our babies, right? But when we run into problems, we're surrounded by our family who may have had negative experiences, our neighbors who are like, oh, you got to wean, this and that. And nobody is saying, oh, let's get you help.
And then it's just so quick for us to feel defeated. And
right.
we just opt to the formula. It's like, we don't even try.
Yeah, it's like, it's so like quick to throw in the towel. I don't want to say quit or give up, because sometimes you have to stop for, you know, sanity, right? But I like to say throw in the towel. And we tend to throw in the towel so early without getting the help. You know, so you talk to people who, you know, they had challenges with breastfeeding, and you ask them, well, did you see IBCLC? Did you see a lactation specialist?
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, that's part of the problem.
Right. But we're not taught that we need this help.
It goes back to the strong Black woman. Nash, or is it you, Bianca, who's talking about that? It goes back to the strong Black woman. Just push through it, you know? Or you just gotta do what you gotta do and keep it moving.
Yeah. The lack of compassion.
Right. How long would you say is the best I mean, I know that we can only do what our body produces, but like, what is the best duration of breastfeeding? Like, I had a friend who she breastfed both of her kids till they were two. I had a friend who was able to breastfeed one of her kids till they were four. Mm-hmm. I had a family member can only breastfeed for 8 months. Mm-hmm. So, what would you say is the, I guess, the best or most ideal for a woman to be able to breastfeed?
Okay, so I can answer this in two ways. Mm-hmm. So I can answer from the perspective of the World Health Organization, WHO. Mm-hmm. They've recommended up to 2 years and beyond. The American Academy of Pediatrics has also adopted the WHO requirement, recommendations, 2 years, up to 2 years and beyond. And that caused a backlash right here in America, because they're like, oh my God, how dare they? You know, we're struggling. And it's like, it's not prescriptive. It's not prescriptive though. You know, if you don't, so that this goes to the second part of my answer. If you don't want to, or if it's not working for you, you don't have to. It's not prescriptive, you know. If you made it to a year and that was your goal and you're happy with it, you're confident, by all means wean. If you made it to 6 months or 5 months and that was your goal and you want to wean, by all means go for it. If you develop any, like, you know, health conditions, postpartum depression, anxiety, psychosis, and breastfeeding is, you know, making it worse, please, you gotta quit, right? The more milk your baby gets, the better. So if you got maybe got milk for 1 day, excellent. If your baby got milk for 3 years, excellent, right? But generally, they say the more, the better. But then that kind of, like, you know, some people just get so stressed out by this, like, oh, they got to keep pushing and push and push, and it's not working for them. Or if it's like mentally draining, or if it's, because there's a term called being touched out.
Yes.
Yeah. Personally.
They want their body back. They don't want to be touched. They don't want to, yeah.
That happened to me once my son hit like 19 months. So we were in the pandemic. You know, I wasn't working. We were just together all the time. And he was just nursing. And I didn't know at the time that my son, he's on the spectrum. So that made it even harder to establish breastfeeding boundaries because of, you know, he didn't understand. We couldn't communicate well. So I definitely got touched out, and I was like, ugh. You see how my face is right now? I was like, I don't want this. Get off of me.
It becomes a burden.
Thank you. It became a burden. Absolutely. So if it wasn't for the pandemic, I think we would have weaned way before the 3.5 years that we weaned. Mm-hmm. You know, but like anthropologists and, you know, lactation specialists, they have done research and, you know, around of populations around the world, and the worldwide weaning age is average to be 2 to 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I thought my friend was, when she said 4, I was like, geez.
So that means there are 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds in parts of this world that are breastfeeding.
That's stupid. When you could talk to me, mommy, I want breasts now.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but a year and a 1-year-old can say that, you know, I want tatas.
Right.
You know, they're communicating their needs from jump, you know? But yeah, it's kind of like, you know, I'm just imagining like 7 years, 8 years. I'm like, dang, get off of me, you know? Like, bye. But yeah. that's just normal human. That's our normal species behavior. Breastfeeding to 7 is a normal behavior, human behavior. And again, this is not prescriptive. I'm not saying you should or you must.
Right.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah, because I saw like a four-year-old one time. I think I had to be like four or five and just walk up to the mom and pop her breast out and just was standing up. And yeah. She was sitting down and she was just nursing. And then she popped it back in and walked away. And I was like, see, I just feel like you're a little bit too independent now. You don't need it.
But you know what? They need it because they're asking for it. Right. Babies, from day one, they're asking for the milk.
If the breast is still producing it, then she still needs it.
Yeah, they still need it, you know, and it's a comfort, it's home, it's everything, you know. As I said, it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And what we call that term breastfeeding. So when you nurse a baby past infancy into toddlerhood, mm-hmm. that's called term breastfeeding. And that's a normal variation of breastfeeding families, right? And there's no, I hate the terminal. I hate when people say, oh, your daughter is still breastfeeding. It's like, still implies that, oh, they should have got off already. And this ain't your business, you know? Mind your own tits, right?
My titties.
My baby is breastfeeding, period. So.
And like I asked before, do you find that it's women that don't breastfeed have a harder time connecting and bonding with their babies?
You know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, some people see it's like breastfeeding is a lifestyle, you know? It's like in the countryside, you know, it's the way of life is different, you know, it's you have more support or the foods are different, it's less stress, you know? And here in our urban society where we don't have paid maternity leave, where, you know, we're harassed, we're discriminated against, stress is at an all-time high. Breastfeeding can seem burdensome. But I don't think that breastfeeding is like the only way to bond with our babies. It is definitely a tool in our arsenal. As moms, you're going to have a lot of tools. You're going to develop a lot of tools because, you know, there's other ways to bond too besides breastfeeding. You could do skin to skin contact. You can bathe your baby, you know, burping, diaper changes. So like the same way how dads and non-gestational partners will bond with the baby is the same way that a mom who is strictly formula feeding can bond. It's just you just use different tools.
Right. And do you have any recommendations on, like, do you have like a favorite breast pump? Well, one, ooh, do you have any recommendations between, like, should a mom have a plug-in pump and a hands-free pump? And then, like, what are your recommendations as far as the brand of pumps that you advocate for?
Right. That's again, excellent question. So most lactation professionals will say that the Spectra breast pump is the best on the market. It works very well. So like there's the Spectra S2 is the one that many folks will get from the insurance companies. So that's like the best pump. I wish I had that, right? Medela,
plug in?
You plug it in. But okay. But the Spectra also has one where it's battery operated and you can walk around with it, right? So the thing to know about breast pumps is that they have motors, right? So the wearable pumps, they are excellent, right? But they it's good to know that the motors are smaller, and we really don't recommend it for, you know, if you just gave birth and you're still establishing your milk supply, right? It's not going to be as effective at removing the milk as the small
one. Not as strong.
Exactly. But once your supply is in, or, you know, of course, this is recommendations. At the end of the day, you're the parents. It's your body. It's your baby. You know, if I'm telling you, or if I'm recommended, hey, you got to make milk by pumping 8 times a day and you want to do 6, okay, well, then we'll try and work with the 6, but to have the expectation that you may not have a full supply, and we have to work with that. right? So yeah, using the hands-free pump. I wish I had one of those too.
I have a hands-free pump right now called.
There's so many on the market.
So I have this one, it's hand-free, and then I was going to get one from my insurance that plugs in. I did speak to a lactation consultant, and she was saying that she wouldn't start to pump with the hands-free one until a month after I already start breastfeeding. And then she did say that, the plug-in one obviously produces more milk because of how strong it is. And she said if I was to use that one, then I would use it, I guess, within the first month if I'm not producing enough milk.
To use the hands-free one.
No, use the plug-in one.
Okay.
And then use this one after a month of me just breastfeeding
Right.
him
Right.
naturally.
Yeah. Because the same thing, it's like similar to what I was saying. I don't think I specified it, but why she said a month is because it takes about like 4 to 6 weeks for your body to regulate the amount
Okay.
of milk that your baby needs.
Right.
So, you don't want to interfere
Because then
with
you
that.
overproduce.
Absolutely.
And then I have
Absolutely.
buy a freezer.
Absolutely. You don't want that. So
Right.
I've heard, I think lactation professionals are steering away from this now, but like when I started nursing, this journey four and a half, five years ago, I was told, oh, you shouldn't pump in the first 6 weeks because it's gonna take, your body has to regulate. Right, fine, but you cannot tell a parent you can't do XYZ. And if anyone is telling either of you can't do this or you must do this, really and truly find another provider.
If you could recommend or suggest something, but it's not about you saying you can't. Like, don't
Yeah.
restrict me.
We're not the police. We're not the lactation police. We're not the formula police.
I feel that. 'Cause I'm really trying to breastfeed, and I know, there's circumstances and stuff, but I just don't want to give him formula. And then I hear about, people finding worms in their formula, and just I, my niece, her mom didn't breastfeed, and then all the formulas that they tried was like giving her colic or she was allergic, and they had to end up like ordering her formula from like Europe,
I
and
see.
became a it's very expensive endeavor, but they had to do what they had to do,
I
and
understand.
I'm just trying to breastfeed for as long as possible. I say it now, and it's like, well, I might end up being over it, but
Well, I want to put more positivity into us, right? Because what I say to folks, it's like our body, we trust our bodies
right.
to carry our babies and deliver our babies. We can trust them to breastfeed our babies. Most women will be able to breastfeed. Most women will be able to make enough milk to nurse their children. It would have been evolutionary suicide if this wasn't the case. So the various studies show that 95 to 99% of women and like new parents worldwide will be able to breastfeed. So the 1 to 5%, those who have like endocrine disorders, like PCOS or things like that, right?
Me, I used to have PCOS.
Okay. Oh, I like that used to.
Yes, I
I
don't
love
think
that you
people
cured yourself.
wear that. I'm like, you sure can.
You cured yourself. Oh my goodness. I was on your website the other day. I was like, let me get some of these products here, So you're gonna see an order from me. So yes, but we gotta think, like we gotta that remember your episode about like the mindset, the positivity mindset. We have to go in with the frame of mind that things are going to work
Right.
and that we know where to go to for support
Right.
if things aren't working the way we expected or intended it to work. Mm-hmm. Because that whole thing of, you know, I'm going to have formula just in case. They're right there. We're already we lost confidence in our bodies.
Right.
We lost confidence, you know.
Exactly. So, like, they sent me, like, 2 cans in the mail. And I'm like, okay.
Sorry.
But, like, but I don't plan on using them. They sent me little coupons and all this stuff. I trust my body. Like, this is what my body is made for. My body is not made for formula.
Get me started on again, formula is not poison. It grows. Right. It's been keeping babies alive, right? But the formula marketing is unethical and is manipulative. Yeah. And them sending cans of formula to pregnant women. It's like, how did you know I was pregnant? Who gave you my information?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you in my business? You could send the formula back.
Okay.
You could send it back. I've definitely done that. And I called them. I said, don't send me any more formula.
You can call them too. Just hold on to it. And I'm like, no, that's putting doubt into my body.
Yeah. That's really and truly, now that, you know, I shouldn't even say this. I was gonna be like, well, you could just go on the road and get a kind of formula. But I'm thinking about the formula crisis. I'm like, it wasn't the case, you know, a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But you brought up a good point about formula. So parents, moms, dads, we need to be able to make an informed decision. In order to do that, we need to have the information. So we understand, you know, human milk is going to be excellent for the majority of human babies. And there are contraindications, like, you know, if you have, and the contraindications will differ based on the country, such as, if, you know, mom here has HIV, it is not recommended for her to breastfeed. Yes. Versus, like, in other countries, she'll be recommended to breastfeed because the risk of using formula is higher, right? If a mom is having radiation treatment, chemotherapy, right, then they recommend do not breastfeed, you know? So that's...
Do you feel like people's eating habits and what they eat, they, you know, like, does it make their breast milk any less effective and you might as well formula feed because you have a poor diet?
No.
So that brings me a question. If your baby is tend to be have a lactose allergy, which my niece gets these all over her face, her entire face will break out. I was going to say break out. Break out in a hivish rash. And they said it might be a milk sensitivity. So it could be, we're trying to see if it's really the formula or if it's just milk in general. Because even the organic formulas, they can be acidic too. So I wonder if that, like, I guess I want to look into if that... because I've heard a few people say that about formula, that their babies are getting allergic reactions to it.
Mm. So galactosemia is a condition that's, you know, very rare. It happens in a very small percentage, like tiny percentage of babies. And those babies cannot ingest their mother's milk or, you know, human milk. These babies, they have a disorder where the galactose in the milk, it cannot, is a problem with it converting to glucose. And they aren't able to, they will have to use a specialty formula in order to live, basically.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. And what's the percentage of that?
Oh, I'm not sure. It's rare.
Let's say I feel like it's pretty rare.
Yeah, galactosemia is rare. Yeah, and then, like, I mentioned, you know, with parents, you know, and moms, dads, we need to be able to make an informed decision. So galactosemia, and if can't breastfeed, shouldn't give human milk. Also, if a parent has HIV in this country, they shouldn't breastfeed. Cancer treatments, radiation treatments, they shouldn't breastfeed, right? One of the risks of, is a rare risk of breastfeeding is the galactosemia. It's rarely rare. Most of us don't have to worry about it. And of course, you know, maternal discomfort, pain, you know, those are the risk, I would say, of formula of breastfeeding or human milk feeding. You know, okay. The benefits and risk of formula feeding, I'm honestly not that well versed in the benefits, the health benefits. If there are any, I'm not sure. You know, in case in the terms of, you know, for babies who are very sensitive, then of course is a benefit because they're able to live, right? But formula, what's on the cans of formula, they don't say that their product is non-sterile. Powdered formula is non-sterile, as which is can be surprising to hear because this is going out to our most vulnerable population. And they don't have this on their cans. They don't say that you need to boil the water to 70 degrees Celsius or 158 degrees Fahrenheit in order to kill certain
Bacteria.
bacteria.
And this, do you feel like this is why people are finding worms in their formula?
I'm not sure about the worms. That could be like a manufacturing defect or
Right.
something.
This was like three different families from three different places. I don't know if it was three different milk brands, but they all found little white worms in their
That's
formula.
gross. And for the formula companies, we'll pass the buck. Oh, it's not us. It's whatever, whatever.
You didn't store it properly or whatever, you know.
They pass the blame onto others. That's, and then of course with formula, you know, it doesn't change. So it's the same formula you'll use whether your baby is a day old or 11 months old.
Right.
Formula doesn't have antibodies. It doesn't have antiviral properties. It doesn't have growth factors. It doesn't have hormones. It doesn't have, you know, it, okay. Now they're putting a fat called oligosaccharide, human milk oligosaccharide, HMO. They synthesized and they synthesize the majority of HMOs that's found in human milk, and they're now putting it in some formulas. There are about 200 types of human milk oligosaccharides in human milk.
And right.
So the formulas they're trying. The goal is their goal is to
Now
make
they're trying to mimic breast milk. First they said
exactly.
it wasn't as good. Now they're trying to mimic the breast milk.
But they could never do that though, because your baby is the one who is telling your body, and each baby is an individual telling your individual body
What it
what
needs.
it needs at a specific time. If you breast milk can't tell you, I mean, for breast, sorry, formula can't tell you,
Your baby hungry.
morning milk, night milk. Formula can't tell you that information.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't change. You know, breastfeeding, but the milk changes, you know, like the taste depends on what you eat, it's gonna change. Even you know, depending on the maternal age is it can is different. There's like so many factors, like the time of day, as Naj mentioned. So it's just it's a living substance. And formula is made from cow's milk. Some people don't really like put that together. That is literally made from milk that's meant to grow
Cows.
large animals. So is so the formula has to be processed in order for it to be digestible by, you know, little humans. And because it's a different species milk, there can be intestinal issues.
Yeah, so like I want to do breast milk, and then when it's time for him to go on milk, I want to give him like oat milk, almond milk. And I've heard backlash about that. And it's like, so I spoke with the WIC people recently, And she was telling me that, you know, because they only offer cow's milk. And I was like, well, she said, well, you know, we've been fighting back and forth with the government for a while on offering other alternatives like oat, almond, or whatever. But their backlash is that oat milk and almond milk doesn't have enough calcium in it as it does cow's milk. And I said, but that's not true. Because oat milk has more calcium, I believe, than cow's milk. And then almond milk has the same amount of calcium as oat, as cow's milk. So I don't know what the problem is.
WIC, okay. WIC, their goal is to save the dairy industry. That is their goal.
I have no desire to have WIC.
That is their goal. You know, formula is made from cow's milk. The cheese, they give you like, what, 16 ounces of cheese a month. Mm-hmm. You can get, as an alternative to cow's milk, they do give you soy milk.
Or lactose-free or soy.
Or they give you, I opted for lactose-free milk, but guess what? They said I can get one, they said I can get, what is it, how many half gallons? Mm-hmm. Half gallons, they don't even sell this. Half gallons of 1% lactose-free milk. You can't find that. That's like...
It's by design. They don't want to find it.
Yeah. I'm like, what is this? So then, all right. So the juice. They give you juice. They're giving you juicy juice, which, you know, is made... You know, it's one of those, like, mass-produced juices.
Okay. Circle. High fructose corn syrup.
And I'm allergic to high fructose corn syrup. That's why I can't eat like the commercial chocolates. So it's like I look at the WIC list, right? And I end up not getting half of the stuff on there.
Right.
I take advantage of the fruits, the dollar, they give you a certain amount of cash for fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the trend of what they give and it's all the same thing. It's like they want to feed us like robots. And it's like, no, people's dietary restrictions call for different things. What if you're vegan?
Right. Mm-hmm. They don't care.
It's a deposit. So. It's a method meant to control people and control what they eat. And honestly, to keep us sick. Who's on
and
WIC?
Say, oh, we're feeding
poor
you.
People.
Right.
Poor
yes. People.
Exactly.
We're feeding you, so be happy with what
exactly.
We give you.
Exactly.
No, exactly. I got WIC because it's like it's something that's always so. Oh, go apply for WIC, and it's like something that you know you just go do when you get pregnant. You go apply for WIC. So, but then you look at the list and you don't even end up getting that list. Will sit there and you don't even end up. Most women that know that got WIC didn't even use their WIC because it was right. Just like. Or to get the WIC.
Your parents are like, get all the help that you need. And this is
mm-hmm. Like, yeah, they're not really helping. Because I don't want to eat none of this stuff.
Right.
Right.
I'm good.
You know? So,
it's by design to keep us sick and to keep us, you know, have inflammation in our bodies. And because, you know, the sicker we are, the more money they can make from us.
The more dependent right. We become.
The more dependent we are. Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not a fan of WIC. Except for the cash for the fruits and veggies. And there's not even enough cash for the fruits and veggies.
You're $44 a month.
That's oh, it went up. Oh, okay.
$44 a month. That's what they give me.
And but the price of food went up too?
Yeah. So
it right. Balanced out.
Right, right. So and the
thing that makes no sense.
What I'm thinking about now, see, I like rabbit holes. So what I'm thinking about now is what if breastfeeding actually, because, all right, before I got pregnant for years and years and years, I always said, when I get pregnant, I'm going to eat a whole lot better because now I'm, you know, it'll force me to, I'm going to be responsible for a whole nother human being. Like, so I can't be so free with my eating and we'll eat out all the time and do all this and that. Right. Do you know at the beginning of my pregnancy, baby don't want nothing fried. Oh, Wendy's. Oh, I'm ready to throw it up. Burger, anything. Like, it was like, no, mommy, I don't want that. And I worked at a restaurant, and it was just like being near the fryer. If I put a French fry in my mouth, it's over. You're not eating that, mommy. I don't want that. So I'm like, what the heck? This has never happened to me. And my mind wants it. because I have cravings. Oh my God, I really want this. My mind wants it and baby's not having it. Like, no, I remember literally saying to my belly, like, I mean, run this in a, like, I, this is my body. And I got to come in this hair and tell me what to do. And I ate something and it was like, nope, never mind. I'm running to the bathroom. I forget that whole speech.
I don't have none of that issues. He has me eating things that I don't eat, like burgers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, yeah. I don't. And my mom is like, wow, like, you don't even eat that stuff. Like, I've never gotten sick. I've never thrown up. I've never anything.
I don't know. It was mostly my first trimester that my body was like, absolutely not. So I think, now it's gotten way better. I can eat whatever. But it's just, I'm thinking if breastfeeding tells the brain of a mom, like, this is the type of food that I want, or this is the type of food that your body's needing to give the baby what they need. I wonder if there's a correlation there. I'm sorry, this is like really a back thought as I'm like listening about the programming and the foods that we eat. If your body, if you're, you know, by your baby breastfeeding and latching, that is also telling your brain, hey, I need to eat more foods with this vitamin because the baby needs more of that.
I cannot,
you know,
back up by any studies or any evidence right now, but I think you're onto something.
Yeah, because we have anemia in our family. My mother, me, my sister, we all have anemia to a point where it makes us weak sometimes. So, and if we all have pica. So our bodies are telling us like, oh, we need this mineral. Huh?
You want ice all the time?
Oh Lord, Bianca, don't shame me about this ice business, you know?
Constantly.
There was a point where I stopped because I was like, I'm gonna not have any teeth left in my mouth. So wow. Yeah, it's that bad to where I'm like, now taking the iron supplements, it helps a lot. But there was a point in time where my mother was like, you're not gonna have no teeth in your head because all I'm hearing all day long is when I was on mute, I was like, oh my God, I need to chew. And so I think maybe our minds would tell us like, hey, you need to eat more foods that are iron rich.
Yeah, I think
genetically your baby's gonna need that.
I think that's true because I didn't eat a lot of meat prior to being pregnant. And now my whole pregnancy I've been eating a lot more like chicken and beef and stuff like that. And I'm like, I think this is just what he needs right now. And it probably will revert back. But I just feel, I haven't even felt guilty about it because I just feel like this is the time and this is what he needs. So I don't become iron deficient or whatever.
Right.
Wow, yeah. This is a very beautiful conversation.
And we still got ways, and there's still so much more to talk about. Oh my goodness. We're scratching the surface.
Right. I would love to have you back, especially once I deliver.
Yeah,
I probably have even more questions.
Yeah,
because this was very, very, very insightful.
Yes, I'm so glad that I get the information, you know, before the process. So like, it's things that I'm like, I literally just jotted down notes so that, you know,
ooh,
I'm like, oh, I can use this. This is just something to add to my toolbox.
Yes, and this is why I push for. Okay, shameless plug. This is why I push for my breastfeeding onboarding session, because I will give this information, you know, before when you're pregnant, you know, why you can like soak up a little bit, make your notes, have your reference, so that when the babies come, you're not just like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? Yeah. Prenatal education is key. It's so important. I'm so happy that you both have received it today.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to put your information in the description, you know, how other people can follow you. Maybe you can put your link to your consultations and, you know, so other moms can reach out and get more knowledge and resources for what you offer.
Absolutely.
You need to keep it circulating.
I even, my rate for the prenatal class is so much lower than it's like, not proportional at all to my hourly rate.
Okay.
I is heavily discounted because I want moms to get this.
Right.
Yeah.
This is beautiful.
It's so important.
So I want to end today's conversation with an affirmation. I don't know if you want to share one as well, but I'll share one. And it is, my body was designed to breastfeed. I make enough milk to meet my baby's needs.
Okay, I love that.
So do I.
Yes. So we'll be saying that affirmation for the next umpteen weeks and years. Yes. Thank you, ladies, so much for talking with us. And I thank you for your expertise and your time today and you booking this interview. You know, I don't believe in coincidence, so this is very synchronistic.
I remember when I saw you at the Woman in the Black Conference, I was like, oh, she's pregnant. Let me go over and talk to her. And she's just looking gorgeous and she's with her products. And I just felt like I just have to talk to you, you know?
I'm happy you did because look what's blossomed from the interaction.
Yes.
And I look forward to having you on here more. We can definitely do another segment. And maybe we'll have some other moms on here that have some other questions. And yeah, I'm excited to see where the journey goes. I'm excited that Naj got some more information. You know, because we just...
Bianca filling my cup, as always.
Go, Bianca. Oh.
Yes.
I try.
Thank you for creating this platform for us.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been a long time. We started on IG Live, and now we just, when we turned 1 year in June, we turned it into a podcast. This will be the 9th episode. Mm-hmm. So we're just going, flowing. So I appreciate everybody who's tuning in and, you know, those who want to be a part of the platform and interview, because this is just a way for us to expand and to give as much resources as possible. So I appreciate you guys so much. And for those of you who tuned in, thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Coochie Conversations. We will be back Wednesday.